Hello and welcome to Is This Thing On, the podcast hosted by me, Sachin Akrani, and the woman who has a fever, a cough and breathing problems. It's Lindsay Bowers.
Oh no.
How you doing?
I was hoping you wouldn't notice.
Coronavirus infected world. How are you coping?
My doctor said that I shouldn't leave a house, but this whole coronavirus thing is rubbish, isn't it?
Well, it's very much real in the sense that people are dying from it, but my sort of thing with it is that I don't see the point of sort of hiding yourself away unless you properly and completely and utterly self-isolate, because if you go out in the world a little bit, then you're interacting with people, so there's no point therefore not going to work. If you go to the shops, you might as well go to work. If you go to work, you might as well go to the shops. Also, if you do stay at home and you live with people who go out, then that's completely pointless as well, because they're obviously interacting with people, so they're coming back and bringing the virus back with them potentially. So I have found the kind of reaction to it slightly hysterical, not in my immediate surroundings. Most people I know are just getting on with their lives, but you know what you read is in the news. All the stockpiling is absolutely insane and also counterproductive, because again, if you're taking all the hand lotion and the soap and the bog roll, other people can't get their hands on it, they then get infected.
It's selfish. Might,
exactly, selfish anyway, absolutely.
And also, I just want to point out, I don't really have a cough. We were having a little laugh with you there, listeners.
Lindsay Bowers has not got coronavirus.
Although, hopefully I don't, but I was saying this this morning to my colleagues, actually. I do have an anxious cough that I've had ever since childhood. One of my colleagues said to me the other day...
anxious cough?
Yeah, no, honestly... I always have a little bit of a cough which flares up when I am anxious.
Is that an actual thing?
Yeah. Oh God, I remember always having it as a child, because I was quite an anxious child. And one of my colleagues said, whenever you walk into the gallery in the morning, Lindsay, the first thing you always do is cough. And like, it's probably just me getting used to my new surroundings, because I've come into a different room. It's probably something as stupid as that. But I definitely don't have coronavirus. Touch wood.
I haven't got it yet, but I am very susceptible to illnesses, so I'm definitely going to get it. But what was interesting, so we should say we're back at the Duke. I got my usual, took my usual journey here, which is Metropolitan Line from St Pancras and then the Central Line to Liverpool Street. And I think I've said on this podcast before, those at around rush hour, which is when I'm travelling to get here to the Duke, those trains are really busy. The Central Line is horrible. Both of them noticeably quieter today.
And you think it's because of coronavirus?
It has to be. The Met line was empty. I got on the train from St Pancras around 5:30. It was empty. But there's about 10 of us on my carriage, and usually it's a lot busy because obviously people leaving work. Central line was still busy, but definitely quieter. And when I came into the pub before, I was the first one here, went to the bar to get some drinks, speaking to the barman, and he said he's noticed a bit of a drop-off in custom as well the last few days as well. And they're bracing themselves for more. So it is having effect on our movements.
I think it's going to change even more by the time this podcast actually comes out as well. So today is Tuesday the 10th of March.
It is.
And the podcast won't come out for another 5 days or so yet,
I'm
will
planning
it?
To put it out on the Sunday the 15th.
So, yeah. So by then, I think there will be some kind of action. But the government has to take some action, I think.
Yeah.
Because when you compare us to Italy, that's on shutdown.
Proper lockdown.
I mean, obviously the problem isn't as widespread here as it is there, but we're seeing exactly the same pattern. It starts off with a few cases, only a handful of deaths, and then it just accelerates suddenly. And we have to be... proactive, not reactive. Basically, I just want to stay at home and not go out.
Well, my biggest worry is, and I think it's a fear that's horrendously going to come true, is, I'm going to bring football into this conversation, Lindsay. Liverpool Football Club are on the brink. My team, I've supported since I was 8 years old, are on the brink of winning the league title for the first time in 30 years. Very exciting for all Liverpool fans. I want to be at Anfield, which is the ground they play at, the stadium they play at when they win the league. And there's a very real possibility now of all games in England being played behind closed doors, basically with no supporters.
Wow, that'd be weird, wouldn't it?
Well, it's happening in Italy, it's happening in Spain, it's happening in France, I believe, possibly Germany as well. And it feels inevitable it's going to come into England. So on the day, the game that Liverpool are likely to win the league is a week on Saturday, play Crystal Palace at home on the 21st of March, Saturday night. And it's likely, well, at the moment I'd say it's about 50-50, but I think it's creeping towards 60-40, 70-30, that there'll be no fans of that game, which is going to be heartbreaking for those of us who are guaranteed a ticket.
Yeah.
I've got a season ticket, but I won't be able to get in and watch my team win the league for the first time since 1990. It's genuinely heartbreaking if that happens, because, well, 30 years. I mean,
wow.
I was 8 when we last won, nine when we last won the league. 39 now, so I'll be 39 on Saturday. Actually, it's my birthday on Saturday.
Well, hopefully it won't come to that. Yeah. I've got a couple of things I'm worried about as well because of coronavirus.
Your wedding. Is this in genuine danger of being postponed?
I was going to mention something else first of all.
What's the other thing?
I've got my wedding, but that's in 5 months' time. But the more immediate thing is, I've got tickets to go to my first ever day rave in a week and a half's time at Printworks in South London. I've never been to a rave before in my life. Me and my friends just decided to book tickets because we're probably going through some kind of midlife crisis. Rudimental, a DJ in there. We all love Rudimental. Exactly. Brilliant. So, you know, we were like, let's book tickets and treat ourselves to this. I'll be really disappointed if that's cancelled. But also, the wedding. Yeah. I am thinking in the back of my mind, if this becomes... Well, apparently it was announced as a pandemic today. Officially.
A pandemic?
Well, I say officially, I saw someone tweet that, so don't hold me to it.
That is definitely not official.
I know, but
all sorts of shit is on Twitter.
I follow a lot of, reputable journalists on Twitter, so if it was one of them, it's probably something in it. One or two not so reputable journalists as well. But anyway.
Is that a dig at me?
No, it wasn't actually.
I'm definitely not reputable, so that would be absolutely fair enough. But I'm also not tweeting about coronavirus either. So.
No, I'm too scared to tweet anything about coronavirus because it's like I'm really torn between this. Wow, this is serious shit, and it's all completely blown out of proportion. I mean,
I think it's sort of in the middle. I think in this country, what 6 people have died from it as we're recording. Someone may have died while we're recording. Hopefully not. God forbid. So 6, I mean, it's relatively low. It's obviously terrible for everyone, for the 6 and their family and friends, but relatively low.
Old, infirm.
Yeah, a lot of them were old, elderly. But in Italy, it's into the hundreds, isn't it, I think? And,
I saw someone...
It's pretty terrifying.
...tweet today. I don't think it was one of my... I think it was when I was on the Jeremy Vine account. I saw someone pop up saying maybe it's spread around Italy because they won't stop kissing each other there. And I was like... My first reaction was... And then I was like, well, actually, they do say no unnecessary kissing in the guidelines. Yeah. So there might be something in that.
I was about to claim that was extremely xenophobic. And then I thought, actually, there might be something in that.
The Italians are very passionate and they do like hair kissing and kissing on the cheek.
Yeah.
And, you know, are ardent lovers, apparently. Well,
so the rumour says, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, let's move on from coronavirus. So I should say, back at the Duke, Tuesday night, it's... A lot quieter than the last 2 episodes we've done here. With Laura Kirk, it was so busy we had to record outside. With John Webb last time out, we were inside just about, but very busy. Here it's very quiet. As I said, it is possibly a little bit down to coronavirus, as the barman was saying. We're sat on a table we've never sat at before, which is the other long table. So not the long table we normally record at, it's the one next to it, which is between both toilets.
Yeah, nice one, Sachin.
So this is why we don't record. Oh, it's not my fault.
Hand dryer
noises, yeah. But yeah, when we came in, there were a couple of people at the long table. On the table to our left, a little round table we otherwise sit at, there's a little baby. Little baby at the table, yeah, not on his own, obviously. He's got his family around him, so
imagine if a baby was just sitting there on its own with a pint in front of it,
strolled in.
We were like, you're right, mate.
Had a really stressful day at daycare, decided to come in for a pint. I'm drinking Camden Pale Ale. You're on Prosecco through force, and what I mean by that is I got here first and I decided to take a guess at what you wanted to drink. I did actually message you, but Ian replied, and I thought I'll just take a guess. It was either going to be Sauvignon Blanc or Prosecco.
Yeah,
I went with Prosecco, I knew that would be wrong, it was. You wanted Sauvignon Blanc, so now you've got Prosecco and Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah, because Sachin got me a glass of Prosecco and it's a little bit flat, so I thought I'll get myself a glass of Sauvignon Blanc anyway. The reason why Sauvignon Blanc was my first choice is because I drank quite a bit of Prosecco over the weekend.
Right.
Had a bit of a crisis this weekend, actually.
Talking
of coronavirus and the fear of it getting in the way of my wedding, I had a bit of a meltdown and told Tally that I wasn't sure I wanted to even have a wedding or get married.
Jesus Christ. What, because of problems in your relationship or just purely because of coronavirus?
No. Basically because I'm a bit mental. No, I shouldn't even joke about that. I've been a bit down lately. I think it's the seasons. I'm very, very, very ready for summer to begin. And I don't know. I think because the wedding's getting nearer and nearer, I'm getting a bit stressed.
It's August, isn't it?
Huh?
August, the wedding.
August, yeah. Five months. And I don't know, it's just really like... I'm starting to worry about all kinds of stupid stuff about it that I wasn't before. And Yeah, on Saturday, I broke down crying and said, really? Are we doing the right thing? Do we want to do this?
Did he just tell you to sort yourself out? Get off the floor, stop crying.
He's very, very...
He does seem the calmer one in
he's
the
very
relationship.
He turned around and said to me, to be honest, I'd be worried if you didn't have an episode like this at some point. He knows me so well. So, so far the wedding is going ahead. It's not been cancelled.
In all seriousness, is coronavirus playing a role in... I mean, it should be fine by then. We should be over by August,
surely. I'm hoping 5 months is long enough that it won't be a thing. But one of my bridesmaids does live in Hong Kong.
Oh, God.
Yeah. We don't have that many people coming from overseas. We've got a couple of invitees in Canada, a couple in Germany, a couple in Hong Kong. I'm hoping by then it will be okay, but I don't know. I mean, we just have to wait and see, don't we? Yeah. I'd be really stressed if I was getting married in, say, a month's time.
Oh, yeah.
Really stressed about
you'd have to seriously be thinking about cancelling it, I think. Then.
Yeah.
Not, I think, necessarily because you yourself would be freaked out. I don't know if you are. I wouldn't be personally. I'm relatively calm, but as I've just said, because I just think there's no point. I think you just got to go. You know, I'm washing my hands relentless at the moment. My hands have never been cleaner.
My hands are like leather.
Yeah.
I've got dry hands anyway, but just from the overwashing and the rubbing all this gel into them, they just feel so dry and clean, but...
Ugh. Yeah, it sounds like I've never cleaned my hands before, but cleaning hands is really tedious when you do it all the time. Like,
do you sing happy birthday while you're doing
No, I just give it a good wash. I'm not doing all that 20 seconds nonsense.
I know, you can feel when you've washed them properly.
But yeah, doing that and just generally being careful, but I'm not going to change my lifestyle for it, because as I said, unless you're properly self-isolating, I just think it's pointless. I had an interesting weekend as well.
Yeah.
Well, I say interesting, that's probably not the appropriate word. My gran's funeral was on Sunday. So she actually died on leap day, if that's the right word, 29th
right,
February. Very sad, obviously. It didn't come as a shock. She'd been ill for a while. But I think it was a real kind of... I mean, obviously, it's very sad for the family anyway. But I think her death, for me, was particularly poignant because she was... She was the last living grandparent. So all four have died. So
how old was she?
96, I think.
Yeah,
96. So I think that's just a really key moment in anyone's life when all your grandparents go, because it's kind of the top layer of your family have departed. My mum's mum went in like in the early 90s. I think I was about 10, 91, I think. 91, 92, around that time. My mum's dad went in 2001. My dad's dad went in 2010. And my dad's mum, who's the granny, died, went on February. So, yeah, just it does make you very reflect, really, when that top player goes. You know, we've got a big extended family, so there's loads of sort of kids now coming through. I mean, there's loads of little nieces and nephews that I don't see. I say nieces and nephews, they're the kids of my cousins. Would you say the children of your cousins and nieces and nephews? Probably would, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Nieces and nephews, loads of them running around now, so... That's obviously very fun and enjoyable and lovely to see. But yeah, it does make you sort of reflect. And I think the thing it's made me reflect, I said just a second ago, it's my birthday on Saturday. I'll be 39. And
this Saturday coming?
Saturday coming, yeah, March 14th. Although I won't be... Oh, thank you very much. I won't actually be celebrating it particularly well because my friend Tom, who does listen to this podcast, so hello, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
We share the same birthday, but he's exactly 1 year older than me. So he's turning 40 on Saturday.
Ooh.
So he's having a dinner to
celebrate. That's a big one, isn't it?
So we'll be having... I'll be at his birthday celebrations on my birthday, but that's absolutely fine. I'm not a big birthday person anyway. But the reason it's making me reflect is I turn 39, I'll be 40 next year. And I don't know, it was the same with your parents, but when my dad turned 40, he turned 40 in 1993, and we made a massive deal of it. My mum threw a surprise party for him, and there was something going on in the early 90s in our family anyway. My uncle had a surprise party, my dad had a surprise party. There's that whole sort of life begins at 40 thing
absolutely.
Going on.
Absolutely.
And I remember it being a big deal. Like, my dad is 40. It felt like a huge thing.
It is.
And I'm on from Saturday, I will be 12 months away from turning 40. I mean, we've talked about midlife crisis stuff.
Planning what you're going to do now.
That just feels
I've
epic.
Already started thinking about what I want to do for my 40th.
Well, I'm not really going to do much. I'll probably just do what Tom's doing, have a dinner with my friends.
No,
but
go, you'll have to go away with the lads or something.
Yeah, if their wives allow it. But it is a big deal. The fact that I'm turning... The age that when my dad turned that age in 1993, I thought it was a massive deal, and it was a real sort of shifting in his life.
It is a real milestone, and I mean, we've talked about aging and midlife crisis and stuff on here before. I imagine it's probably quite a lot to get your head around as well.
Well, it's all part of that whole midlife crisis thing. Yeah, it is just crazy. Just, yeah.
But just as a note, I remember very clearly my mum's 40th. And it's so weird because I remember when my mum turned 40, I would have been about 21. About 19, 20. She had me when she was about 20, 21. But I remember at the time thinking, wow, it's my mum's 40th. Like, and no offence, mum. Well, she doesn't listen to this anyway. But no offence, mum. But I was thinking, that's old.
Yeah.
But I'm only 5 years away from that myself now. And when I think about me and my friends turning 40, I think, oh, that's not that old. But my mum had a massive party on a farm in Essex with a Queen tribute band who sounded just like Queen. Oh, I'm not even joking.
What was their name? I love tribute band
names. I do not know. I can tell you after this. I cannot remember. But even the guy who was Freddie Mercury looked just like Freddie Mercury, but short and fat.
I think they revealed it.
Well, they cost like a lot. And wow. I remember we were camped and I was in a tent like doing my makeup for the party and I heard them sound checking and I thought someone was just playing Bohemian Rhapsody on a loudspeaker because they sounded so good.
All right.
It was a really good night.
Well, in a way, Queen are now a Queen tribute act because they've got, obviously they've got, I don't know if they're still going.
Is it Jamie Lambert who's replaced Freddie now?
Well, they've had two, haven't they? They had the guy from, I can't remember the name, there's an American band who was Freddie's replacement, and I think he's been replaced by a younger bloke, Jamie Lambert. Is it Jamie Lambert? Is that his name? I'm not sure. Might be.
Jamie Lambert is actually someone who comes to the Jeremy Vine show, who is in a band called Calabro. He's lovely.
There you go. Adam Lambert.
It's Adam Lambert we're thinking of.
But then you've got Brian May, John Deacon, and Roger Taylor still there.
Yeah. And also, can I just say, Brian May, one of the loveliest men I've ever met.
Seems he loves badgers, doesn't he?
He loves badgers.
King loves badgers.
He really doesn't want those badgers to die.
I think he loves badgers more than he loves Queen. Really good. Right, so this episode, as ever, we'll have the quiz, which you're helming today.
We haven't put much effort into it this
time. No, I've got to say, me and Lindsay, we were WhatsApping this morning. Saying,
I've been having a crisis.
Yeah, we've both had difficult
I've
weekends.
I've hardly done anything to prepare for this. I'll roll up and spill my guts.
Well, we've had sort of life and death weekends, haven't we? In a way. Quite an episode. Yeah, that's our excuse. Just struggling to come up with ideas, but we've got something, so we'll do that. And before that, we're going to tackle a topic which we've been teasing for a few weeks now. We're finally going to talk about Facebookification. We're going to have a proper row, and get into that. But before we do that, should we have a little break, get some drinks in, before we get going on that?
Sure.
So I'm going to get another pint of Camden Pale Ale, which is quite nice, and get you a something along. Should we do that?
Yeah.
Right. Let's have a break. Go to the bar and then have a row. Lindsay's back from the bar. She's brought me another pint of Camden Pale Ale, and you've got yourself another Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah, but I haven't even finished the last one. Lining them up in case I run out.
Well, I've got dregs left from my first pint, so I'm moving on to the second one. And if I want to finish the dregs off, I will.
I think you're drinking a little bit faster since we started this podcast.
Do you reckon? Should I tell you what's happened from doing this podcast? This is genuinely what's happened. So I don't get drunk very easily. I mean, I can drink a bit, and I don't get sort of wasted and sort of morph into a complete lunatic or anything. But what's always been an issue, well, not always an issue for me over the last few years, is my tolerance levels have gone through the floor. So if I have a couple of pints, I'm an absolute wreck the following day, which is just borderline pathetic. But doing this podcast has really kind of, not massively, but to a decent level, it's kind of stiffened up my tolerance levels. So I'm waking up in a better state after drinking, and it's got to be from doing this podcast. Even though we only meet once a fortnight, just that once a fortnight meeting and having that sort of...
This is my community service to you.
You've done me a favour, yeah. I mean, I do drink at home, but it's like one glass of wine with dinner. We're coming here and having a couple of pints on one occasion, two bottles of red wine, which was just absolutely fucking insane, but we did. It's really chilled out now, isn't it? The baby's gone, which is a shame because
I've just bumped into my mate Felix at the bar.
Yeah, you're saying. Yeah. He's what, doing a crossword, is he?
I've already said that. No, I said it before we started.
You said that before we started recording again.
I'm not repeating myself. Like
not going mad. No. No, you said that before we started recording again. Yeah, so really chilled out, very quiet. As I said, coronavirus related potentially, but also it could just be because it's a Tuesday in early March.
And also, I do think everyone's a little bit down as well. Not to like be on a downer. But, you know, I was earlier saying, oh, I'm having a bit of a bleak kind of time with mental health at the moment. A lot of people I know are like that.
It's a bit of a shit time, isn't
it? I mean,
Boris Johnson's Prime Minister, for fuck's sake.
About my feelings all the time and blah, blah. But honestly, I've been really open with my friends. Like, oh, I feel like shit at the moment. And a lot of them have turned around and gone, yeah, yeah, me too.
I mean, this is a topic for another podcast entirely, but we just do talk more openly now about our feelings, don't we?
Yeah.
I don't want to sound like your mate Piers Morgan. I think sometimes we over talk about how we're feeling sometimes. I think sometimes we just get slightly...
I get why people think that, but I think it is good to talk.
Self-obsessed. But no, overall, it's definitely a good thing to talk more and express how you're feeling. But on the issue of being open about your private life, specifically about mental health, does sort of link to the topic we're going to come on to, and it will link eventually, so bear with me, listeners. But we are now going to talk about something that, as I said, we've been teasing for a couple of episodes, and it's going to lead to me and Lindsay having a bit of a Barney, hopefully, which would hopefully make for good podcasting. Have you got your gloves on? Have you got your mouth shield
in? I think you're raising it up a bit too much. I mean, we might completely agree on every point, but we both know that's not going
to
happen.
That would be terrible, Lindsay. We have to
just
argue.
Going by like some of the tweets exchange we have.
Well, let's talk about it. So this is the Facebookification of Twitter. So first of all, I should say I didn't come up with this phrase. It was from somebody I know off Twitter called Harry Sherlock. I don't know if you listen to this pod. If you do, hello Harry. He came up with
name.
It's a lovely name, isn't it? And he's a lovely guy, Harry. Really top bloke. And he came up with this phrase, and he came up with it when we were having a little discussion, me, him, and a guy called Phil McNulty, who's a BBC sports journalist, another lovely guy. Hello Phil, if you by chance listen to this podcast. About, do you remember the Decades Challenge, which occurred at the very end of last year? So what this was,
yes,
was people were posting images of themselves in late 2009, and an image of themselves from late 2019. Well, did you? That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's an excuse to post a picture of how hot you used to look.
Well,
and
here we
compare
go.
It to how great you look for your age now.
Here we go. Here we fucking go. Right, let's get the ball rolling. So this is happening a lot at the end of 2019. People posting images of themselves in 2009 and images of themselves in 2019. And I just found it ridiculous. So me and Phil were equally... Phil McNulty equally thought it was pretty ridiculous. And we were just kind of between ourselves going, why are people doing this? What possible motivation have they got for doing this? Why do they think anyone cares on Twitter about what they look like in 2019? And we were having this conversation, and Harry got involved, and he came up with this brilliant phrase. He called it the Facebookification of Twitter. And the reason I like that phrase so much is to go back to my relationship with, or to talk about my relationship with Facebook. I joined Facebook in around 2006, loved it, got well into it, height of sort of social media addiction. And I came off it in 2012. And the reason I came off it in 2012 was I just found it to become an incredibly self-indulgent place. And specifically, because of the age I am, around that time I was in my early 30s, and a lot of my friends and family were getting married and having kids.
Mm.
And they were flooding Facebook with pictures of specifically of their children. I mean, just constant pictures of their kids. And I found it absolutely... just nauseating. I just simply couldn't take any more kids pictures. And I should say I've got a child of myself, so it wasn't sort of envy or jealousy or anything. I've got my own child, but I just couldn't stand all these kids pictures flooding Facebook from my friends and family. So I came off Facebook. That was literally the reason I came off it. The only social media platform I'm on is Twitter, and one of the reasons I like Twitter is you sort of, you don't really get that on Twitter. Twitter is there for kind of, I mean, it's there for kind of horrendous abuse and football fans arguing with each other, which is obviously not great. But it's also there, I think, for people sending you sort of funny memes and GIFs and just making you laugh, you know.
Yeah.
I love people on Twitter who just post funny shit all the time, just nonsense. We've talked about Laura Claxon, who hopefully will try and get onto this podcast once, with a fantastic HMV thread, stuff like that. Also links to articles and podcasts, and that's what it's for. It's not... for self-indulgence. It's not for telling me about how amazing your life is. If you want to tell me how amazing your life is or how amazing you are, do it on Facebook and Instagram, two things I'm not at.
So which rule book are you going by?
Well, I'm going by Sachin Akrani's rule book. So what seems to be happening, I think, and this is the topic we're talking about, is the Facebookification of Twitter. Twitter is becoming, for me, a far more self-indulgent place. It started with a Decades Challenge, and this is where I'm going to bring Lindsay in. It then moved to the
Dolly Parton
Challenge. Now, Lindsay, you took part in the Dolly Parton challenge, and I went back like a weird obsessive through your Twitter feed to find out exactly when you posted this tweet, 25th of January. So do you want to explain what the Dolly Parton challenge is, and then do you want to say, do you want to talk through your contribution to it?
Okay. So Dolly Parton herself, the very famous singer, I think she's known for having a cracking sense of humour, or she's got a crack social media team, but she posted something that became an instant meme. She posted a picture of herself in four various different aspects. Hang on, I have to think about this. So,
was it Facebook?
Yeah, no, it was LinkedIn.
LinkedIn,
so her looking like 9 to 5.
Yeah.
Facebook, Twitter, and
Instagram.
No, was it Twitter or? Right, one's Instagram. Oh, no, sorry. Get rid of Twitter. It's LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and Tinder.
Tinder, yeah.
So the idea is, I can't remember exactly what Dolly herself posted, but everyone started posting grids of themselves with four different pictures where they're showing themselves looking work appropriate for LinkedIn, sort of family friendly, wholesome for Facebook, what you'd want your nan to see, edgy, cool, looking your very best for Instagram, and then hot as fuck sexy for Tinder.
And that's what you did, wasn't it?
Well, you know, I tried.
So you posted four very kind of appropriate pictures for that.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, Lindsay, I love you. You're my friend. You're my podcast buddy. You're my podcast co-host.
I'm bracing
you're my
myself.
Friend. We've got to know each other over the last 6-8 months, whatever it is, since we started doing this. But I was really disappointed by your contribution to this, because in the time I've got to know you, I found you to be a really self-deprecating, funny, self-aware person. But your pictures were all completely straight. And your Tinder one, I think, was you on holiday in a...
Yeah, in a bikini.
In a bikini.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest, I just thought it was unnecessarily and disappointingly self-indulgent. And
Of course it is.
Okay, so I want to ask you two questions about this then, right? So first of all, I'm genuinely intrigued by this. So when you're sitting there on the 25th of January, what was your thought process before you did it? And the second question is, what was the reaction you were hoping to get from it?
Well, to be honest, you know, I'm a social media producer.
You are. So, and very good at it as well, by the way.
Huh?
Very good at it as well.
I
think so.
Do you follow Jeremy Vine social?
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Thanks, mate.
Of course I do.
Well, great. I wasn't expecting a compliment. You give me a shit sandwich.
A slice of cheese among all the poo in that sandwich, yeah.
Anyway, no, honestly, because it was going so big and so many people were doing it, I actually messaged, I'm in a WhatsApp group called Vine Time, which is Jeremy Vine and all the senior producers of a Jeremy Vine show. And I said, Jeremy, like, everyone's getting onto this meme, you should do it. And he did. And he actually did it in a way you would approve of, because he did it in a funny way, not in a self-indulgent way at all. He posted the same picture for all of them,
which
was just him looking open-mouthed, like,
what
the hell am I doing?
Yeah.
And I thought it was brilliant. And just because we were talking about it, it made me think, I'm going to do my own one. And I just went through all my pictures thinking, which one would go with what? And a part of me was thinking, yeah, I look good in that bikini picture. There's an excuse to put it out there. Why not? I'm going to be completely and utterly honest.
Because I was really hoping you'd come back and sort of give you some sort of speech on the empowerment of feminism. But you are just basically saying it was because you look really...
A feminist can be proud of her body.
That is true. But do you not...
It's not trashy. It is self-indulgent. I'll give you that. But there's nothing wrong with a woman showing herself off a bit. Why not?
Okay, so on to that second question. What was the reaction? You must be hoping to have got a reaction from it, because otherwise there'd be no point doing it.
Don't post anything on Twitter hoping for a reaction. It's nice when I get a nice reaction, but I don't even remember the reaction I got from that.
Well, I'll tell you what, I haven't got it on me at the moment, because we should say we've turned our phones off, because we've had issues with sound before, so me and Lindsay both now turn our phones off to avoid any sort of crackling noises that we've had previously. But if I had turned my phone on, I would go through and look at the comments. And I remember there was one where... It was along the lines of, what's the point of this? And you said in reply, again, I haven't got the exact wording here, along the lines of, just to annoy you or something.
Yeah.
And I thought...
Because I thought, why do people have to tell me that they find it pointless or annoying? Why don't you just move on?
But then why post it then? Well, I don't understand
because
why you would do that.
Because it's my Twitter account and I'm not posting to please... I don't think this person even followed me. I'm not posting to please random men on the internet. I'm posting because this is me. This is my personality. And yes, my personality is very self-deprecating. But my personality is also a little bit of a show-off. It is. And I don't regret that. I didn't really think about it that deeply, to be honest. And I usually when I do these memes, I am quite self-deprecating because the most recent one was post for people that
I was
going to
come on to this. Yeah. I was going to come on to this.
Okay, good.
Well, no. So let's talk about this then. This was a doppelganger challenge, wasn't it? Which is four people that... Was it
four people tell you... Yeah. It has to be four people that people have actually told you that you look like them.
So this, for me, this was a mixed bag, Lindsay, because one of them was Miss Piggy. Yeah. Very funny. The first
Which
one...
a bully at school told me I look like.
Well, that's terrible. That's awful. But funny.
Know, obviously, I can laugh it off and it hasn't traumatised.
But the first one was Sienna Miller. Now, there is a likeness there.
I know she is me if I were to be a lot better looking than I am. No. But I have been compared to her by three or four different people.
But again, see, I thought, because Sienna Miller is one of those one of those women who's held up as being objectively beautiful. Everyone just goes, Sienna Miller.
She's a toothy blonde.
Yeah.
And I'm a toothy
blonde.
Again, that's all it is.
I looked at that and went, I can see that. I mean, it's not a wild shout to say you look like Sienna Miller. Anyone who hasn't seen Lindsay Bowers at all, let me just say, it's not a wild shout. There is definitely similarities there. But again, it's sort of reaching, in my opinion, for kind of sort of level of self-indulgence to go, I look like this woman who a lot of people in the world think looks really attractive. And again, I was like, and we had a bit of an exchange on Twitter about it, lighthearted exchange. But again, I was like, oh man,
I don't
Lindsay.
Know, it's very subjective though, because I put it on my Instagram as well, and one of my male friends said to me, what did he say? He said something like, yeah, you do look like Sienna Miller. I find her a bit unattractive, though.
And I think she's hot, by the way.
And I was like, well, like, thank you. But no. He was like, oh, no, she's too skinny and whatever. But I'm not as skinny as her, so I don't know. But I don't really... I just... When I see an online bandwagon, I do jump on it because... I'm a social media producer and I like to keep on top of things, but also there is self-indulgence in it. And
so if you post those, the doppelganger thing and the Dolly Parton challenge thing, and nobody comments on it, genuinely, are you disappointed? Nobody compliments you, or even
I would feel a bit silly, maybe.
Yeah,
but do you want to know something really terrible? This isn't so much on Twitter. So you say you left Facebook because you couldn't take the self-indulgence. And
the baby picture specifically, but yes, the general kind of self-obsession.
Do not join Instagram. Instagram is the new Facebook.
Yeah.
It is absolute. Facebook, you go on Facebook these days, it's all political mudslinging and weird like community groups. And it's kind of like, it's become this weird kind of washout of disgruntlement. But it's not so much the parade of look at me, it used to be. That's now Instagram.
Yeah.
And I'm guilty of it as well. I do it just as much as most people. But as a social media producer, when I'm working on a show or brand, I know that if something works, I post more of it. And if you were to go onto Instagram and scroll through all my pictures that have the most likes are ones that are pictures of me.
Yeah.
If I post a picture of a sunset, or a picture of Tally, or a picture of even me with a group of friends, it's not as much as a picture of just me. And I'm not saying it's because I'm beautiful or anything like that. I think it's just people indulge in each other's indulgence on Instagram. If you've got, like, good friends anyway, I don't know. Like,
that seems really weird and slightly toxic to me.
It is.
That seems horrendous.
It really is. Like, do you know what? It's so weird. I haven't put two and two together, but maybe because I knew I was talking about this today. Today I actually put a thing on my Instagram where it tells you when you've been on it for a certain amount of time. So I know, because I need to restrict myself from going on there so much. Because you are endlessly scrolling through people's like highlights of their life, but also them looking the best they ever look. I mean, people who work with me know I don't necessarily look like the best pictures I post myself on Instagram, because you always put your best angle, the best lighting, a little bit of filter. But it is kind of perpetuated by the fact that you do get a good response from posting nice pictures of yourself.
So, because, yeah, I'm not on Instagram. And I mean, we could call this the Instagramification of Twitter as much as Facebookification.
Yeah, it's more because, honestly, Facebook is like a whole different kettle of fish to when you are on it.
No, that's true. I mean, I've heard that as well, in terms of it's become a lot more about political advertising and slogans and articles. But, yeah, I just think for me, like, one of the most kind of important qualities a human being can have is modesty. I think, like, my friends are my friends for various reasons, because they're loyal, they're kind, we share same cultural interests, whether it be music or comedy or films, whatever. But it's also because they're modest. If my friends weren't modest, they wouldn't be my friends.
Yeah.
So I find this whole kind of, and I'm probably over self-deprecating. I probably self-deprecate too much, and that's probably potentially held me back in life, because I don't promote myself as much as I should do. But I'd rather be that than overly going on about myself and portraying myself in the best light. And that's why I find Instagram just a horrendous place. And we've talked about Instagram on this podcast, I think episode one, maybe episode two, about it being this place where people portray their life in the best way possible. And I just find that incredibly sort of toxic. And the way you're talking about it there, I find it sounds just like a really sad place. And I know Laura Kirk, when she was on the podcast, she talked about wishing she could come off it, or wishing it could be, didn't exist completely. So I'm just sort of, again, sort of curious. Okay. Are you looking for sort of validation off those?
Yeah, of course. I think we all are. A lot of us are. I am quite an insecure person. I don't know if you've got that yet, but I am.
I think we all are to an extent. Yeah, absolutely.
But it's, I know earlier I was agreeing with you, it is a toxic kind of place, but at the same time, it can be uplifting. You know,
well, Instagram can be uplifting.
Yeah, it is nice. If you know, for example, like posting about us getting on Spotify. Today we've got on Spotify, which is a great thing. I posted it on my Instagram stories. A couple of people replied to that being like, oh, brilliant, well done. And they're lauding something that's, you know, that we've done that's good. And, you know, it's such a weird crossover of social media platforms. But what tends to happen with a lot of people on Instagram is they see stuff come up on their Facebook reminds people every day of things that happened years ago.
Yeah.
So it'll be like this day 10 years ago, this day 5 years ago, this day 2 years ago. And what a lot of people do, and I do it a lot, is if there's something that they like, oh, like I look good in that picture, or that was a really good memory, or they'll screen grab it and then post it to their Instagram being like, this was whatever many years ago. And I did it. I was in a magazine fashion shoot about, I can't remember, like quite a few years ago now. And it was half look at me, but also half self-deprecating, because I look quite nice in the pictures because I'm a young 20-something-year-old with like really nice hair and makeup done. But also, it's really fucking cheesy and really like cringe. Like the outfits I'm put in are like just a bit questionable. So, you know, a screen grab them was like throwback to when I was in Reveal magazine, like ha ha ha, what a chump kind of thing. And it is kind of like, look at me, didn't I look nice? But also, look at me, didn't I look ridiculous? It's like, it's...
Yeah. I mean, look, we're all guilty of that. And the way I do it, I mean, I don't do... You know, I didn't do the decade challenge. I didn't do the doppelganger thing. I didn't do the Dolly Parton thing. I just that is just not me. I would never do any of that.
I don't think your demographic really does do it.
No. I mean, the way I sort of do it is, I guess, is I show off when I'm at football matches. So at big games, I will post a picture of me in the stadium. But what I would say in defence of that is other football fans. So in my football Twitter, to use that horrible phrase, that's very common where, you know, I follow a lot of people who are into football and they will post pictures of themselves at matches, you know, journalists as well as sort of fans. So just give you an example, there's a guy I know called Will Unwin, who's a Man City fan who works with me at The Guardian. Lovely bloke. And he was...
I know Will.
Do you?
Yeah,
you went to ITV.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Oh, my God, I love Will. We've had lunch together and stuff. Yeah.
God. That's amazing. Of course, as you said, yeah. I said, of course, you'd know him from ITV.
Oh, God, he should come on as a guest, actually.
Will's a lovely guy.
He's
mate.
So funny.
He's a lovely, yeah, very dry, dry
very
sense of
dry.
Humor.
Very fucking dry. Hell. It's like the Sahara Desert.
That's fossil, yeah. Very dry. But no, he's a lovely bloke. He's a big Manchester City fan. And he went to Real Madrid. He went to see Man City play Real Madrid recently. He was at the Bernabeu, which is the name of Real Madrid Stadium. Iconic ground. And he took a picture of himself in the Bernabeu. Or not a picture of himself, but just a picture off the Bernabeu.
He's not a selfie kind
of guy,
is he?
No, he was not a selfie. Yeah. You couldn't see Will in the picture. You just saw the pitch in the stadium. Yeah. Now, that's... Look, let's be honest, Will. If you're listening, you're probably not. But if you are, that's you showing off about being in the Bernabeu. But... I could take something from that, because I could say I looked at Will's picture of him in the Bernabeu and I went, oh, that's because I've been there. I went there in 2009 when Liverpool played there, and I could sort of reminisce about being there and look how it's changed potentially and look at the view he had. So I'd like to think when I post pictures of myself, again, not me, but I post pictures
where you are,
where
showing
I
showing what look at what I've
look
met
where or, I am, yeah.
Yeah,
people can go, oh, that's what the stadium looks like from that angle, or that's what it looks like now if they've been there for a while. And also there's people, when people, I mean, I hate this as well, but when people post pictures of themselves on holiday and stick it on Twitter, I hate that as well. But equally, I can look at a picture of a beach and go, well, that's a lovely beach, it might uplift me a little bit. But also on a practical level, I might go, oh, that looks like a lovely place to visit, I'll go there myself on holiday. So at least from those things I can take something. But when people just post pictures of themselves, whether it be the decade challenge, the Dolly Parton thing, the doppelganger thing,
no.
There's nothing for me to take. And then I do become curious about what the person who's done it is expecting as a response to that.
It's not just about that, though. It's not about what you take from it. It's people do, other people other than you do appreciate that. I mean...
What, the doppelganger decade challenge?
So, first of all, the doppelganger challenge and the... No, sorry, not the doppelganger. The Dolly Parton challenge, I posted on Instagram before I posted it on Twitter. And as soon as I posted it, the first thing I did was click on the hashtag and scroll through loads of other people's and liked loads of them, because it's funny. It's fun. It's a meme. It brings you together. It's something that kind... It's like it brings you into a little community. And the doppelganger one is a little bit self-indulgent, maybe, if you do literally just do four gorgeous people. I did put Miss Piggy.
You
in
did
there.
Put Miss Piggy. I'll give you that. That was fine. I did metaphorically doff my cap to you and did Miss Piggy. But, I mean, again, because we've talked about social media and sort of the sort of mental health issues around it as well. And I just think, I also think people look at, I mean, it's interesting what you're saying. It really does kind of, I'm curious about the kind of the mentality around this and what people are looking for it. But I also think, like, so without blowing too much smoke up your ass, Lindsay, you're an attractive woman, right? You've posted four pictures of yourself looking attractive. And I think there'll be a follower of yours who maybe has huge self insecurities about their own look and appearance. And they'll see you in those four pictures and go, oh, my God, she's just way more attractive than I am, and then feel sort of bad about themselves.
Yeah, I
do you
don't
not think,
that's
an issue?
No, not at all.
I mean, that is going to happen, though.
Maybe people looking at Bella Hadid, or you know, like all the Kardashian clans who are completely photoshopped and plastic surgeried up to the eyeballs. I mean, I think they can be the accused of that, not me. But one thing I will say, if anyone's listening to this who's ever looked at a picture of me and thought I feel bad about myself because of you, one thing I will tell you with absolute certainty is the more selfies I'm posting on social media, the more bad I'm feeling inside.
But you know what? That's probably true of a lot of people, isn't it, actually?
Yeah.
As you say, I was thinking
absolutely
that.
Absolutely 100% is. It is.
It just feels like, you know what?
It doesn't mean if I'm posting those of them I'm feeling awful, but I'm more likely to do it if I'm not feeling quite right.
So... when you do that, then, are you looking for...
I'm looking for validation.
You are literally, that's the word I was about to use, validation.
Not consciously, but because I'm being very honest with myself and now with you, when I think about it, yeah, I guess I am, because I don't know what. It's so weird. It's like a dopamine hit, like getting a like, you know.
But I think social media's like that in a way. I remember Charlie Brooker.
Yeah.
So he did a program a while back now, 4 or 5 years ago. It was called the 100. You know, these sort of things that Channel 4 do, the 100 best biscuits, the 100 best chocolate bars, 100 best films, 100 best books, the 100 best kids games. You know, those sort of, I'm a sucker for those kind of countdown shows. Yeah. And Charlie Brooker hosted one called 100 best computer games, I think it was, because he's a big gamer. Mm-hmm. So I was watching this. I remember it was one Saturday 4 or 5 years ago, and he was going through it, and he got to the sort of number two, and he'd done all the big games. I'm not a gamer, big gamer myself, but I'm aware of sort of the big games. He'd done all of them. He'd done, you know, Mario Kart, Super Mario Brothers, Sonic the Hedgehog, Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat. And I was thinking, what's left? What's going to be at number one? He's done all the big games. I can't think of anything that he hasn't done. And you know what number one was? Twitter. And the way Charlie Brooker justified Twitter as a game, he said the reason Twitter is a game is because it's like Sonic trying to collect rings or Mario going through the levels. Yeah. We are trying to collect followers on Twitter.
I think of it in exactly the same way sometimes.
And it's something that's lived with me ever since. And I do think...
Nail on the head.
Yeah, absolutely. We've all got that sort of thing of trying to get validation. And look, what I do on Twitter, and I'll be honest with you, I post generally loads of kind of silly comments, funny, what I think amusing funny comments, and I'm looking for people to go, oh Sachin, you're really funny, that's really funny, well done, like it, retweet it.
How is that different from me posting the picture of me in a bikini? Well, because I know that people will like that.
Yeah, no, well, I'll tell you what the difference is. Absolutely, you're absolutely right to say that, and there is definitely that wanting validation. I'd say the difference is when I post, if I post a funny comment, or if anyone posts a funny comment. So if I post a funny comment, it might make someone laugh. So they're getting something out of that. If someone posts a funny comment and I laugh, I'm getting something out of that. I'm getting a hit of joy. Oh, you've made me laugh. Of all the Laura Claxton, of all the funny people who do that on a regular basis. If you post a picture of yourself, of you, so if you post a picture of you, Lindsay Bowers, mm-hmm. I can't get anything out of that.
Yeah.
Now you get something out of that if someone goes, oh, you look beautiful, you look stunning. But what, maybe the person who looks at it might get something out of it in a slightly weird, perverse way.
You're completely right, actually. Yeah, it is a case of the only people who are getting anything from, say it's Twitter and I post a selfie of myself for no particular reason, I'm doing it for myself, and for like the only other people that get something out of it is either people who are such close friends of me and love me so much they just like seeing me looking happy or whatever I'm doing, or pervy men.
Exactly.
But I would never post a selfie on Twitter without enough context. But I probably have been guilty of doing it in the past. But I feel like as I'm getting older, I'm doing it less. But I do wonder if I was a 21-year-old now, I'd probably be posting selfies all over the fucking place just to get that validation.
Well, I think that's definitely happening.
Even if it's just from like random men, you know. But it's kind of on Instagram more than Twitter. If you post a picture of yourself, it's interesting to see who likes it. Like if an ex-colleague likes it, I'm like, It gives you a little warm and fuzzy inside to think they still think well of you, you know?
Yeah, I can see that.
A lot of my parents' friends are on Instagram and they like a lot of my stuff and they feel like my aunts and uncles and I love them to bits, and it's kind of like that kind of family feeling, you know? The funny thing about Instagram is... I posted an excerpt of our last episode with John Webb on my stories, which was me talking about going to a sex club. And I posted it in my stories and I'm like, oh God, like, of course, you can see on Instagram stories who's looking at it. And literally the first 10 people are all my parents' friends, and it's me talking about going to a sex club.
So can you just say to someone, me specifically, who isn't on Instagram, what is an Instagram? I've heard of Instagram stories, but what is it exactly?
So when you go on Instagram, most people will be familiar with what we call the grid, which is where you just post a picture and it lives on your page forever.
Yeah.
A story, if you're on Facebook, you'll be familiar with this, is where you can post something that stays on your profile sort of in a corner and people can choose whether to look at it or not. And if they do, they tap on it and they'll see your video or your picture or whatever you've posted, and it will stay there for just 24 hours and then it will disappear. So what I've done is I've posted the video I posted on Twitter of our guest John talking about normies and kink and me talking about going to a sex club. by the way, if you're wondering what Helen talked about, go to the last episode and listen, because it's really good.
Yeah, let's quickly do that. So last episode, episode 11, this is episode 12,
yeah,
isn't 12, it?
Yeah.
John Webb, aka Jabbins, Lindsay's mate, brilliant. Such a great guest, so interesting. Talking about putt play, which is the sexual fetish or the kink that he's into. Go listen to it. It's very, very good. It's brilliant. Carry
but
on,
anyway,
sorry.
I think I finished really. Instagram stories is just a very, very fleeting sort of... have you ever been on Snapchat before?
Never.
Okay. I can't even be bothered to go into that.
No, it's fine.
Basically, Instagram stories stole kind of Snapchat's whole identity and made it a lot better. And now it's become a whole big beast. And apparently, Twitter is going to introduce this whole story function.
Oh, God.
Which the other day the hashtag RIP Twitter was trending, because honestly it's not Twitter appropriate at all for the reasons you've been telling me. I mean, I'm okay posting the odd meme picture of myself on Twitter, but am I going to post stories so people can see what I'm doing? No, I'm happy to do that on Instagram because that is my self-indulgent warm fuzzy place, but Twitter is the place where the sharks are, where they can grab you by the throat and rip you to shreds. I'm not doing that there.
So, well, I was going to ask you about this. Do you feel, I mean, that sounds horrendous to me, that story thing coming on Twitter. I mean, I'm thinking of, I know for sure I'm going to come off it in the summer anyway and take a break from it. So I took a break from Twitter last November for about 8 months, and I genuinely quite enjoyed it. I only came back slightly by accident. I was a bit pissed and I reactivated my account. But I'm genuinely going to take a break in... I know I said I was going to take a break around Christmas and I didn't, but I am genuinely going to take a break around the summer, and I'm sort of almost looking forward to it. But just talking about this more broadly, and whether you think Twitter has become a lot more personalised and a lot more Facebook, Instagram-like. For instance, I have noticed a lot more people posting pictures of their kids on there in the way they used to on Facebook. There's two people in particular, I won't say their names, but I've muted both of them. I like them both. They're both really good people to follow on Twitter, really interesting people. But I've muted them both because at different times, they have flooded it with pictures of their newborn child in a way that...
On Twitter. That really surprises me.
Pictures of their kids. Well, one person was relentless pictures of their kids. The other one was the odd picture of the kid, but more updates about the kid. Oh, he started crawling, he started talking, all that nonsense. And other people as well, just talking in a sort of way about their mental health and their personal life. That it's not that it's not appropriate for Twitter, because your Twitter feed is your Twitter feed and no one is the guardian of it, but in a way that I just don't think is helpful. So there's a lot of people I see on Twitter now who say, oh, I'm just having a really crappy day, a really terrible day, or just really struggling, and like, I feel sorry for that person. But I also think, as you just said, use of the word sharks is a really good way. This isn't the place to be talking about this. There's some horrible people on there. If you're struggling, go talk to your friends and family.
There
go talk to a counsellor. Don't put this out there on Twitter. It's not a good place to be doing this.
There is also a massive, massive, massive community of let's all talk about our mental health on Twitter. There is.
True,
but I completely get what you're saying. And actually, you've just reminded me, this is a couple of years ago now, but I did actually unfollow a girl because her behaviour on Twitter triggered me into making me feel anxious, because I could see her pain. I could see that she was suffering and that she was so, 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 so desperate for validation. It made me feel like I had to either give it to her or kind of behave in a... it was really weird, but I remember I just couldn't face it anymore and I unfollowed her. And she's a very, very big advocate for mental health. She's got quite a lot of followers. But she went through a stage of posting loads of pictures of herself in her underwear and being like, I'm so happy with my body, this is me. And I was like, I didn't like it because I could recognise what she was doing, because when I'm not happy with myself, I post more pictures of myself online.
As you just said,
but she was doing it to like the fucking extreme, like in lingerie,
God,
multiple times a day. And I was like, you're very beautiful and whatever, but like, I can see what you're doing and you're hurt. Like every time I saw a picture of her posted in her lingerie, I was like, I can see you're hurting. And it reminds me of how I feel when I'm kind of doing that, but not to that
That is
level.
Not healthy in the slightest.
But, it's really awkward because I unfollowed her and then I saw she unfollowed me. So she obviously has the same app as me where she can tell when people have unfollowed her. So then I felt really bad because she knew I'd unfollowed her.
You need to mute people. Muting's the way forward. Yeah, that way you don't have that awkwardness, but you still don't have to see their feeds.
But it's, I feel like such a hypocrite because... Yeah, I do sometimes think, I do sometimes post content that would annoy me if someone else posted it.
Yeah.
I do. And why doesn't it stop me? I don't know. Do you know what? I saw someone tweet the other day how much they love Instagram because they love seeing their friends happy. And I thought, that's such a nice take. Because all
that
we ever do is compare ourselves to others and... we're jealous or envious, but actually I do get enjoyment out of scrolling through my stories and seeing what my friends and colleagues are up to that day, what they're doing when they go home, what they're doing on holiday. Like one of my colleagues has just been to Japan, and it was really nice to, like, for him to come into the office. What, no symptoms of coronavirus, by the way, but he came back into the office and I was like, how was Japan? Instead of saying your holidays pictures looked amazing, I'm like, your Instagram looked amazing. Because instead of posting, back in the old days, it would be post a massive photo album on Facebook.
Yeah.
And if people could be bothered to click through, then they would. Yeah. But on Instagram, it's stories. And it's literally, I could see that he was in a bar where there were pigs running around. Or I could see he was on the top of a skyscraper. Or, you know, he was showing the moments he wanted to show. And... Instagram's very, very brutal in that if you don't want to see the content, you just, it's so easy to just swipe past it. But the stuff you do want to see, you see. And it is a great way of keeping connected to people. You feel like you know friends who live across the other side of the world far better because of it.
That is a nice sentiment. So I like to see my friends happy.
So that is a good thing about it.
The reason I will... That's firms up why I'll never join Instagram, because I don't want to see my friends happy. I want to see them all miserable, living worse lives than me.
Miserable
git. Or that I'm such a git. That's a really good chat, I think.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to have a row, but that actually just turned into quite a nice discussion.
Yeah, well.
I enjoyed that. It was good. Let's talk about the quiz you won on Thursday. This is very exciting.
Yay.
Do tell.
So, our last guest, John Webb.
The lovely, brilliant John Webb, a.k.a. Jabbins.
Is
it Jabbin or Jabbins?
Jabbins.
Jabbins. Yeah, Jabbins.
He was my colleague at GMB, Good Morning Britain. And now Good Morning Britain, for the last 2 years, have won what is referred to as the ultimate news quiz, which is a quiz held at a posh venue where teams get together. I think there was about 400 people this year.
Wow.
And you have everyone, you have, you know, every news outlet you can think of. You know, ITV News, Channel 4 News, Channel 5 News, Sky News, any kind of TV team that makes news are there. And Good Morning Britain have won this ultimate news quiz that I hold every year for the last 2 years. And I've always seen on social media with envy as they win it, because I think, oh, I used to work with them, and oh, look at them having fun. But anyway, Jeremy Vine entered a team this year, and I was invited to be on it. And spoiler alert, we won.
You won. Congratulations.
And it was a marvellous, marvellous night. I remember walking in thinking, I'm very lucky to be invited here because I am literally a dead weight. Like, you walk in, they hand you a glass of champagne. The event's sponsored by Premier League. So I had my picture taken with a Premier League trophy.
Yeah, that's where you should go. That's where you saw the trophy, or you stood next to the Premier League trophy, yeah.
So I was like, hee, I'm just here for the free booze. I'm a dead weight. I'm going to be absolutely rubbish. But then it was a proper, like, sit-down dinner. So I sat down for dinner, and I was sat between Jeremy Vine and a little extra person we had on our team, which might have been a part of a reason of why we won. You might have heard of a certain egghead called Kevin Ashman. I was sat between Jeremy and Kevin. Kevin Ashman, by the way, is one of the best quizzers in the country.
I should say, for anyone who doesn't know, Eggheads is a show that Jeremy Vine presents.
Yes.
There's one regular team on that, which is four sort of brainiacs, and Kevin is one of them,
yeah,
essentially.
He is an absolute, like, literally, there were some questions where it was sort of, what was the day and time of such and such, and he just knew it.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh. But I actually redeemed myself, because I thought, oh, like, I need to make myself useful as I'm here having all the free booze and food and stuff sat between these two really intelligent men. But I actually did, because I happened to know a couple of questions that no one else in my team knew.
All right. Do you remember what they were?
I'm going to ask them to you now.
Wow. So let's go. That's a wonderful segue into the quiz. So this is a, the regular ITTO pub quiz.
All the questions of the Ultimate News Quiz, I would just ask them all to you, but I can only remember the two that I got that no one else on my table knew.
Ask away.
And it's not to say they never would have known it. It was just, I think it might be the case of they just couldn't remember it, and I remembered it.
Yeah.
So the first one was, who said, it was a quote, who said, London is no longer a British city?
Grim quote. Sounds very Brexity.
And this is in the last year, by the way. It's
I do. That sounds like a really. That sounds like. I mean, I can picture the person saying it, but I can't. Well, as in, I remember it being said. I know who it is. I think it's just come to me. Was it Donald Trump?
No.
Who was it?
Well, I was about to say they might not have said it. They might have tweeted it.
Okay. No.
But I remember sitting around the table.
Katie Hopkins.
Well, it's funny you say that, because sitting around the table, the first words out of my mouth was Katie Hopkins. That sounds like something Katie Hopkins would say. And I think that's what was scribbled down. And then literally, just as the timer was about to go off, I went, no, it was John Cleese. It was John Cleese.
John Cleese tweeted it,
yeah.
Oh, that's really disappointing. Did John Cleese really say that?
Did he not? It was quite a big news story when he did it.
I remember the phrasing, but I genuinely thought it was Katie Hopkins or Don Trump. I didn't think it was John Cleese. That's really sad.
John Cleese did
grim.
Tweet that, yeah.
Oh my God.
But anyway, got me a point.
Wow. Well done.
So at that point, I was like, I've kind of earned my place in this team now. Brilliant. Then there was another question.
Yeah, what is it?
It was about the infamous Prince Andrew interview with Emily Maitlis.
The award-winning.
The award-winning
Prince Andrew interview, yeah.
So the question was, what word does Prince Andrew use to describe Jeffrey Epstein's behaviour?
That's a really good question. Oh, God, it's there. I can see him saying it on that interview.
And you can picture her look of disdain after his...
Oh, that's bugging me.
She called him out on it.
Yeah, she did. It was genuinely one of the most iconic moments of the year. Oh, that's bugging the shit out of me. There'll be people listening to this screaming as they listen to this because they know it. And I can see it. I can see her face. I can see the look of absolute disgust. I can see her repeating it back to him. Oh, I can't remember what it is. Go and tell me. I can't.
Okay, so someone on our table went, it's ungentlemanly. And I went, no, it's not.
No.
And at this point, I was pretty pissed. And I actually did that kind of thing where you put your fingertips in your skull as if it's going to, like, try and put some, like, brain waves in your skull. And I was like, just give me a moment. And then I went, Unbecoming.
Emily made this going, Unbecoming.
I mean... What a bad choice of word, right?
Oh, wow.
But anyway, I was really happy because I remember those two things.
You did really well there.
And I'm not saying we won because of me. We won because we had an egghead on our team, because I think we ended up being first by 5 points.
Lindsay, it's a team effort. You played your part.
It's a team effort. But the fact I actually contributed something made me so, so happy.
And two questions, which I think are quite difficult. I wouldn't have got either of them.
So someone said to me later that night, I think your brain works better when you're really pissed.
Yeah.
And I was like, well,
there you go.
let's not test that theory, shall we?
Really good. Okay, so that's it. I think we're done.
Yeah.
Another episode wrapped up. So usual stuff before we do the lead out music. Please rate and review the podcast. 5-star reviews, please, so other people can find the podcast. It really does help us out. Also, get in touch via the Twitter account, at ITTO pod. Email address, ittopod@gmail.com. really do get in touch, we would appreciate it. And as
follow us on Spotify.
And I was just about to say, we are now on Spotify. It's taken us fucking ages, but we're finally
excited
Spotify.
About this.
Yeah, so we're on Spotify. I mean, Lindsay, you're more Spotify. You are a Spotify person. I'm not. Is there any details you need to let people know about getting on Spotify that I wouldn't be aware of?
I have no idea, but all I know is so many people have said to me, are you on Spotify? Are you on Spotify? If you're on Spotify, I would listen to you all the time. But no, we are on Spotify
now. We are there,
I'm not sure how easy it is to find us because we've only just got on there.
Literally this afternoon. It was literally this afternoon that we got on there.
But the link to our Spotify page, or whatever you want to call it, is on our Twitter and on my Instagram account.
There we go, bringing it back.
Where there's lots and lots of pictures of me.
Lindsay Bowers. So there's genuinely go to the Twitter account at ITTOpod and you'll find a link to Spotify. Very excited about being there. And obviously, we're on iTunes and various other platforms. Brilliant, excellent. Okay, so before we go, before we leave the Duke, let's do the music. It's My Phone for the first time in a long while. I'm going to select a song from my current running playlist, the playlist I use when I go out running. Is that okay? Does that suit you?
I'm in a mood for running music because I really need to tone up and lose a bit of jiggle before the wedding.
So this is my the playlist. I change my the playlist I use when I go out running regularly. So this is the current running playlist, and it's got, how many songs has it got? It's got 18 songs on it.
18? Is that all?
Well,
my running playlist is about 100.
Well, I listen to, the way I do it is I listen to a podcast for half, because I run for about an hour, 20 minutes. I do about six miles.
Oh, wow, that's a pretty good run.
Yeah, it's about 6 miles or roughly around that time. So I listen to a podcast for about half to three quarters. And then the home straight, I stick some music on and sort of go through, try and sprint as much as I can home. I don't really sprint, but as much as I can. So then I stick the music on. So I don't need a lot of music on there because I'm only doing it for a short amount of time. So 18 is plenty. Right, so I'm going to hit shuffle now on my running playlist. Here we go.
Do I know what this song is going to be?
Have you heard of that song?
Oh my God, I haven't, but it sounds amazing.
It's a brilliant track, yeah.
It sounds like something I'd like to try.
It sounds like something you almost certainly have tried, and I'm surprised you haven't.
No, I haven't done that in that, but maybe I will one day.
You should. I haven't done that in that either, but it sounds like a lot of fun. Brilliant. Okay, yeah, it's a bit of a banger. It's a lovely track. It's a great track. It's a great running track as well. Fantastic, Lindsay. I think we're done. We'll be back soon as ever. And thanks for listening. And as I said, get in touch and please, please, please rate and review so other people can find us. Lindsay, say goodbye.
Goodbye. Tell your friends how brilliant we are.
And we're on Spotify.
Whoop, whoop.
Took a pill in Ibiza to show Avicii I was cool. And when I finally got sober, felt 10 years older, but fuck it, it was something to do. I'm living out in LA. I drive a sports car just to prove I'm a real big baller, cause I made $1 million and I spend it on girls and shoes. But you don't wanna be high like me, never really know why like me. You don't ever wanna step off that roller coaster and be all alone. And you don't wanna ride the bus like this, never know who to trust like this. You don't wanna be stuck up on that stage singing, stuck up on that stage singing. Oh, I know a sad soul, sad souls, darling, all I know are sad souls, sad souls. That's so